at the end of the rainbow. Don't miss this ongoing adventures of a feral hippie.
Hi, this is Bo.
And this is Rocco.
And the Bo and Rocco Show is here to offer insight into legal and lawful remedies. Our goal is to remain free and help others remain free in an ever-increasing police-like state. With the help of our guests, we try to answer questions such as what went wrong and what can we do about it.
So tune in to Revolution Radio at www.freedomslips.com Wednesday nights, 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to listen to the Bo and Rocco Show.
You don't need to expect us.
We're already here.
Revolution Radio. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Time, see what become of me. For I looked around for my possibilities. I was so hard to please. But look around, the leaves are brown, and the sky is a hazy shade of winter. Hear the Salvation Army band. Down by the riverside is bound to be a better ride than what you've got planned. Carry your cup in your hand and look around. The leaves are brown and the sky is a hazy shade of winter. Hang on to your hopes, my friend. That's an easy thing to say, but if your hopes should pass away, it's simply pretend that you can build them again. Look around. The grass is high. The fields are ripe. It's the springtime of my life. Seasons change with the scenery, weaving time in a tapestry. Won't you stop and remember me at any convenient time? Funny how my memory skips while looking over manuscripts of unpublished rhyme. Drinking my vodka and lime, I look around. The leaves are brown. And the sky is a hazy shade of winter.
Well, I'm back home in FLA, Fort Lauderdale. Not much winter here. I had a great trip to Philly. Very nice time at my reunion, but I'm happy to be home. I picked up some kind of a chest cold on the plane back, so I'm a bit less than 100% tonight, and hope you'll please accept my apologies in advance for any faux pas that may occur. If the song didn't sound right, well, hey, we can blame that on the cold too, right? How about that? Very convenient. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we're streaming to you live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And it's a listener-supported station, so don't forget to show them some love. Visit freedomslips.com and see what you can do, you know, with a donation or a purchase to help keep all their great shows on the air, especially considering they had a lightning strike two or three days back and are having to replace most of the hardware for the Studio B, which is what we're on. We're on a backup system now. So, anyway, I'm Chuck Gregory, New American Dream Radio Show, and I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome special guests Jim Fetzer, Richard Flamer, Phil Ferruccio, and Susan Lindauer. And so tonight we are joined together for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Port Orange, Madison, somewhere in Iowa, Tacoma Park, and wherever you are. We continue with our mini-series regarding A Trumpet to Arms, Alternative Media in America. It's a book. The culmination of all this is Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett in the False Flag Weekly News on No Lies Radio every Thursday. They are the evolved media. We know that today's newspapers, radio, TV are garbage, as well as the current version of what passes for alternative media, The Nation, Progressive, NPR, Alternate, Rachel Maddow, Justin Raimondo, Seymour Hersh, David Swanson, Amy Goodman, John Stewart, if not garbage, at least suspicious, very suspicious. But what we want to do is to say something in this mini-series here about the history of the alternative press, the beginnings that have evolved into Fetzer and Barrett. More from the book by David Armstrong. In the 20s and 30s, the bold mood of the pre-war years gave way to the ideological struggles of the Stalin era and the survival struggles of the Depression. Periodicals such as the Communist Party's Daily Worker reflected the somber mood of those years. The worker covered strikes, councils of the unemployed, and hunger marches. During the Popular Front years, the paper had a lively entertainment section to which Woody Guthrie and Mike Gold contributed columns. The worker also advocated the racial integration of sports long before it occurred. Worker sports editor Lester Rodney is credited with influencing the Brooklyn Dodgers branch rookie to sign Jackie Robinson. In the McCarthy deep freeze of the late 40s and early 50s, the worker lost many of its readers to a new paper, the National Guardian. Founded in 1948 to back the Progressive Party presidential bid of Henry Wallace, the Guardian offered comprehensive, professionally written news from left liberal perspective. The National Guardian also spearheaded the doomed international campaign to save the Rosenbergs in the early 50s. Not all of the left-leaning papers were communist, like the Daily Worker, or socialist, like the National Guardian. Christened on May Day 1933 as a religious alternative to the Daily Worker, the Catholic Worker promoted pacifism, the dignity of labor, and the glory of God. The paper was edited by Dorothy Day, a Greenwich Village leftist who dramatically converted to Catholicism in the 20s. One of the young managing editors who served under Day, Michael Harrington, went on to write The Other America, a wrenching expose of poverty in America that helped convince Kennedy and Johnson to launch the federal social welfare programs in the 60s. The workers' program of civil disobedience and nonviolent moral witnessing provided a model of behavior for anti-war activists in the 60s. The Catholic Worker was edited by Dorothy Day until just before her death in 1980 at the age of 81. The paper claims a circulation of 90,000 and sells for a penny. From A Trumpet to Arms, Alternative Media in America, continuing next week.
And now, for another episode of The Lives of the Cowboys from last week. Stay clear, focused, fat, and stupid. The colonel led his men in their morning mantra and then held out a box of red Twizzlers for Duke and Bubba Steve and the others to dig into on their way out the door. Hit the streets and be careful out there, boys. Information is everywhere, I'm afraid. But, hey, wait. The colonel stopped them to hand them the new updated face sheet from Homeland Security and Walmart on ISIS and how they're coming over here and they will probably be here soon, maybe later today. And this could be pretty much it, is kind of the deal. So said the colonel, holding the door for Duke, Bubba, Steve, and the other officers. They stared at the open door in the street and Mrs. Thomas clutching her purse to her chest on her way to the post office. Go on, said the colonel, taking his boot and his knee to shove them all out the door. Get! This week, we find Duke and Bubba Steve sitting in the squad car on the curb, staring straight ahead, eating popcorn. On homecoming parade duty, The crowd pushed up tight to the streets. The day was bright and blue. The bands marched past. The team floated past on a flatbed. And then, Bubba Steve grabbed for the radio mic and dropped it. His eyes were wide. Duke choked on his popcorn. It was happening. Coming straight down Main Street was a float. A big black float. The Deathmobile. Standing on the front of the float in a pirate bandana, pirate shirt, pirate pants, and pirate sword was John Belushi. He ripped off his shirt and displayed a white t-shirt with pizza stains and ISIS written across his chest and pencil. Ramming speed, shouted Belushi, pointing his sword at Duke and Bubba Steve in the cruiser. Duke turned the key and pumped the gas. Bubba Steve tossed his popcorn out the window. The Deathmobile loomed large, closing in on them, headed straight for the cruiser. ISIS coming right at them at ramming speed. Their worstest ever nightmare yet. Right out in front of everybody. Duke and Bubba Steve's moms and dads and brothers, sisters, girlfriends, teachers. ISIS, the cousin of Al and Bob Qaeda, trying to take over the world. And they had to go through Duke and Bubba Steve to do it. Stay tuned next week for another episode of The Lives of the Cowboys, sponsored by Twizzlers, when we will hear Duke say, Allah Akbar, and we will hear Bubba Steve say, I know, right? The Lives of the Cowboys, sponsored by Twizzlers. The 9/11 Museum was unveiled and opened a while back in New York City, which begs the question, where would the Museum for Democracy be placed? It should be in Washington, D.C., we would think, or... Yeah, you're right. Right next to the 9/11 Museum in New York City. I know, right? The Museum for Democracy will have a walkway from the 9/11 Museum and will have artifacts from September 11, 2001, such as the TV tapes and transcripts telling us not 10 minutes after it happened that it was done by Osama bin Laden. There will also be the missing video from the surrounding area showing the missile hitting the Pentagon. The Democracy Museum will also have artifacts from the November 22, 1963, OKC, Waco, Wellstone, RFK, MLK, 9/11, Sandy Hook, and Boston. The Democracy Museum will have the tape of Dan Rather telling us the Zapruder film shows Kennedy's head and body lurching forward. It will have the bullets found on the street next to J.D. Tippit's body, the second and third unexploded bombs found inside the Murrah building, the charred bodies of the children at Waco, the flight recorder of the Wellstone plane, the photos in the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel confiscated by the Los Angeles police, the real investigation into who are H. Wayne Carver, Gene Rosen, and Robbie Parker. The real investigation into who really died or was injured at the Boston Marathon. And stuff like that. And now a public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Walmart, and Martha Stewart. We're now on triple secret orange alert. Pull the apple pies from the windowsill, secure the baseball fields, the Chevrolet, secure Grandma. Bubba Qaeda and Bubba Sis have been spotted in the U.S. They're born in a small town, in little pink houses, getting their thrills on Blueberry Hill, getting their kicks on Route 66. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Now, pull up close. Some flannel and some pie and a Lutheran. Pull up close. Some flannel and some pie and a Lutheran.
Our first guest of the evening is Richard Flamer. Richard normally speaks to us from Chiapas, Mexico, but I think he is, last time we spoke to him, he was up here in Iowa on a trip, a working trip, a working vacation to do some construction work to make money for the worker. So I think we'll talk to him up here. Richard Flamer lives and operates the Chiapas Mexico Catholic Worker along with his wife, Aracel, Araceli. Richard is a Vietnam veteran, former rare book dealer, former prison warden, former prisoner for peace, was a Reuters war photographer in Central America for several years, is a construction jack-of-all-trades, and we think he's now in Iowa doing work to make money to help support the work down in Mexico with the poorest of the poor. And we will try to get Richard on the phone right about now.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. These last couple of weeks, I've been in the U.S. at the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Really a great place. If you have to come to the States, it's a good place to come to. I'm still filled with that kind of strange, I suppose they call it culture shock. But working at the Catholic Worker helps a lot, alleviates a lot of that problem. Day-to-day work at the Catholic Worker is not particularly strenuous, but they feed 50 to 60 people twice a day. From leftovers and from donated food, some of which is pretty great, actually, because they have a relationship with Trader Joe's here, so they managed to get some really good cheeses and meats and that sort of thing that are not quite out of date. They also pass out clothes, canned goods, the needy things, mostly to homeless people or people who are on the margins. There's some people that have been coming to the Catholic Worker here for 20 years, in the 20 years that I've been, when I first made arrangements and came here. Some of the same people, just down and out, and some, quite a number of those who are mentally challenged, and they're good people, good, decent people who don't have much. And some are old-fashioned hobos who live along the river, and they camp out and live on the river and probably drink too much, and they're not allowed in if they're drinking or are drunk, but they manage to make it 3 or 4 days a week for a decent meal and a shower. Additionally, there's a food pantry every Saturday, which just fills me with joy. There's a vegetable, fruit dispensary that's basically the people who do distribution for this region. Our good Catholic family, and they load up a van that we have that's it's a one-ton van, and it's usually stuffed with fresh vegetables and fruit, which we take over to a small community church here and pass out every Saturday morning. And it's a wonderful thing that by and large, the people coming through are immigrants from the neighborhood. The area that we live in is supposedly the area of the poor. But they're immigrants from Bosnia, from Mexico, from Central America. There's some Syrians here now, a couple of Nepalese, some people from Laos. It's just a strange, wonderful group. We're quite happy to be receiving all these fresh vegetables, and sometimes we have flowers, and sometimes we have cakes and pastries. And they get a choice between pastries and flowers, and the bulk of them choose flowers, which is wonderful. Additionally, I've been working usually 4 days a week for an old friend of mine doing construction projects. everything from replacing basement windows with glass block to capturing a mother raccoon that got into the basement somehow. And then the last couple of days I've been working on a floor and refinishing a wood floor in a 100-year-old house. And it's tough getting old. It's certainly not for sissies. It's, but what I lack in speed, I make up for in experience. So I'm pretty happy with the way I'm working. And it's a way to make some money to take back down there to Central America, to Chiapas. Additionally, I've been hitting people up for donations. Not so much money, but tools, which I'll be taking back down when I go. I've been working with a woodshop group of young men and who have no tools. And there's a great store in town here that's all woodworking tools, and the owner has been very generous in the past. And this year, he I gave him a list of tools, and he said he could probably fill most of it. So I'm going to have roughly $9,000 worth of woodworking tools to take back down. Of course, then I need to find the money to pay the taxes, because the Mexican government doesn't have any. They're really awful about that. They require a 16% value-added tax to everything coming in. So I'll have to go out and find the money for that. But it's coming along. And then I'm getting caught up with my health issues. I have a 40% disability from the VA, courtesy of Vietnam. And so they, this Veterans Hospital here in Des Moines is really a great one. They're really, really wonderful people. So I get all my meds for free. And the doctor that I have actually gives me meds for the children down there. He says, "Oh, don't you need some topical ointments and some and so on and so on." And he ends up sending me away with a grocery bag full of medicine. Additionally, I get free shoes and a new pair of glasses every year, if I can make it up here. Since I only get up here roughly every 2 years, they won't give me two pair, but they do give me a new pair. And I said to the optometrist, I said, "Well, how are my eyes doing?" And he said, "Well, you're growing cataracts." And I said, "Oh, cool. Now, how does that happen?" He said, "Birthdays." So I guess he said, "Wait a year and a half, and when they really start bothering you, we'll take them off." But in the meantime, it's interesting. There is a certain kind of sadness, though, when I go to see all the young veterans. There are kids there from the Iraq and from Afghanistan who are just in awful shape. I saw two young men helping each other down the hallway, and one of them had half of his head missing, and the other was telling him, no, we'll go to the vending machine, and he had to sit and explain how the vending machine worked, but he couldn't remember what the numbers were, and some little 10-year-old kid came by and said, no, you put the money in here, and what do you want? And this 10-year-old helps the two guys pick out what they want. It's such a sad thing, that the idea that wars, they're so useless. They're just, they're all about the Benjamins, all about the money and the oil and the people who are after the money and the oil they're not the ones suffering. The ones suffering are these young people who get deluded into thinking that they're acting for their country when in fact they're acting for corporations. It's just incredibly sad to me. And finally, the best news is my wife is coming in from Mexico tonight. She's flying in and will be here for 45 days. I don't know if I explained to you before, but we went to the U.S. Embassy for 5 years running every year to try and get her a visa to come up to the States. And they kept denying her a visa, and finally she got one that's good for 10 years. And so she's coming up, and she'll be practicing her English and working at the Catholic Worker, which should give her a nice experience to deal with the poor. And at the same time, her favorite sport is going to secondhand clothing stores and buying things for her sisters and her friends back there in Chiapas. So I'm pretty excited. She's coming tonight, and we'll be here for a while. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. Thanks, Richard. I'm doing pretty well. I just got back from a trip to Philadelphia for my high school reunion, the 45th reunion, and I had a great time up there. I'm really glad to hear that Araceli's going to be coming up to be with you there in Des Moines. That's great.
Yeah, it's I'm pretty excited. And I did pick up an old pickup from a friend of mine and getting it in shape to drive those tools down. So she and I will have something to drive around while we're here. And
oh, that's good. That's so, very good.
Yep. It should be fun.
You know, my trip was the first time I'd been outside of Florida in, well, since the 90s. So it was interesting. I'm, you know, hey, there's really a world out there.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I've been driving around Des Moines looking for parts or things like that, and rediscovering the joy of springtime. There's flowers everywhere. The Catholic Worker is fortunate in having some volunteers who come over and plant. And so we have irises and daylilies and tulips coming up. And it's such a wonderful town for old architecture. And there's a lot of Victorian houses here, and they're all in good shape. And it's really fun to see. So long as you don't think about DuPont and Monsanto down the road.
Right.
But, you know, it's all right. Springtime in Des Moines.
Well, springtime in Des Moines does sound very nice. And you sound much more acclimated to the United States than you did a month ago.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be, but I guess I am.
I know that would have had mixed feelings about that, right? Well,
give my best to Mike.
Absolutely.
Coach, how you doing, Rich?
Good. And tell him
I'm listening. I'm here.
Come down and visit me.
How long are you going to be there?
Till June.
Till June. Well, that's coming up, yeah. Yeah, I have to do that. It's I don't know. It's a ways. You're gonna stay in Iowa all that time, huh?
Yeah, be back and forth between Iowa and Omaha, Nebraska. And I've got some work over there, and I'm working with the bishop over there to get some scholarships for some of these kids down in Guatemala.
Wow, cool.
So, yeah, lots to do.
I think that we're not getting our half hour ads tonight. Normally we're kind of over time for the interview, but
okay.
It's really been great visiting with you, Richard. Can you tell our listeners one more time where they can make donations on your behalf?
Sure. To the Chiapas Project, care of Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715 Izzard, Izard Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102. And we welcome whatever we can get.
Well, thanks again. It's always great to talk with you, Richard. And we'll talk to you next month.
Okay, take care. Bye. Chuck?
Yes. Since we aren't having the ads, let's do a quick plug right now for Revolution Radio. The reason we're not having our usual fancy ads tonight is that their recording studio for Studio B was struck by lightning on Tuesday night. And so they're struggling to put everything back together. And just the fact that they have us on the air tonight is a testament to how hard they work on the behalf of independent radio. They are listener supported, and if you visit freedomslips.com, anything that you can do for them would be appreciated by them and by us.
Sounds great, Chuck, and we'll just continue on. And now we hear from Andre Vilcek. Andre Vilcek is a novelist, philosopher, investigative journalist, filmmaker, photographer, and playwright. He has covered dozens of war zones and conflicts from Bosnia and Peru to Sri Lanka, Congo, and East Timor. Since World War II, the panoptic of the pro-Western puppets is truly horrifying, Andre says. It would take an entire book to list at least the most important, the most bloodstained names of the collaborators with the Western regime. For years, decades, and centuries, the West was actually aiding the most extreme forces of oppression, of terror and nihilism. Direct support given by the West to fascist governments, to the right-wing military, to religious zealots, and feudal family and power structures is actually something that is visible and easily detectable, at least if one wants to see and one wants to notice.
However, there are many concealed ways how the West operates. While creating and sustaining enormous and complex group, or call it an army of collaborators, in all client states, as well as in those countries that have been selected for destabilization and destruction. It is done through support for arts and culture, by funding those artists who are willing to produce empty pop to put form over substance, refusing to address social and political problems of the country and to bring them to the masses. It is done through the UN and countless international NGOs that are in many loyal and servile countries like Kenya, hiking salaries and benefits of the local staff, and in this way are helping to manufacture and sustain the new elites. These elites, well-paid and therefore loyal, instead of serving their people, are actually enjoying the tremendous gap created between them and the impoverished, often starving masses. Excuse me. It is done through corrupting journalists by sending them on all-paid training courses to London, New York, Paris, or Tokyo. It is done through education, through scholarships given to the selected groups of young people who are willing to accept Western democratic values and fully abandon revolutionary struggle at home. These people, after returning home, are usually joining the fifth column infiltrating government offices, academia, and mass media.
Be it in business or in the state sector, they are serving their foreign masters and their own pockets instead of their nations. It is done through direct corruption, because corruption, as was described by John Perkins in his Confessions of an Economic Hitman, is one of the main tools utilized by the Western imperialism. More corrupt, more pampered are the elites in a client state, more reliable they become. The Western colonialist establishment knows perfectly well how to deal with the locals, how to tickle the vanity of the elites in the Middle East, subcontinent, Africa, and Southeast Asia, how to make them feel exceptional, enlightened, sophisticated, oceans away from that brutal and ignorant majority. Deep rifts are created in order to prevent nations from uniting against external enemies. Elites are sipping cafe lattes, reading books that made it to the New York Times bestseller list. They are boozing it up, watching CNN or BBC or Al Jazeera, and doing all they can to live a normal life as they see it in commercial films imported from the West. What is grotesque is that it is actually those members of collaborating elites all over the poor world that are mass-produced, desperately gray, tugging the same line. They think the same, reason in the same way, and live similarly empty existence. It is because no matter on what continent they live, the empire injects them with the same doctrines, makes them desire the same things. Their dreams are mass-produced, and so are their loves and even their betrayals. They shop in the same malls for the same brands, eat in the same restaurants, watch the same stupid films, and listen to the similar crappy music. They use the same social media, the same phones, and they succumb to the same extreme individualism. It is me time, and me, me, me goes first, while millions of their compatriots are forced to live in a gutter.
Most of the collaborators support similar political ideas. Almost all of them are right-wing, pro-Western, and neoliberal. After working and living in many client states of the empire, I now clearly see that even the most uneducated farmers in the countryside are more creative, have more dignity and understanding of the world than the collaborating urban elites. Simple people have their individual views, and they have at least some basic human instincts like compassion and kindness. The empire is manufacturing emptiness, nihilism. It is an extremely depressing empire. Those who are serving it, or more precisely, those who are prostituting themselves with it, are actually very sad, even pathetic individuals, lacking character, integrity, and diversity. At the same time, they're extremely brutal and selfish. And they are looting their own countries, oppressing their own people. But even power does not seem to bring them much joy.
They are scared. They don't know exactly why, but they sense that they are doing something wrong. The more scared they are, the more power they think they need. More power and more wealth. In order to be protected, in order to be able to build fences and to hire guards and eventually disappear to their mansions and condominiums abroad if things explode at home.
This arrangement will not last forever. Now there's a great number of countries fighting for a better arrangement of the world. There's almost the entire Latin America, Russia, China, South Africa, Eritrea, and Iran, refusing to succumb to the empire. Others are joining. No matter how brilliant are the masters of horror scenarios, no matter how well they are playing their flutes, no matter how many millions of servants are licking their boots, it is certain that their violent art would not be allowed to dominate the world stage for long.
Recently, the West triggered the conflict in the Ukraine, where it helped to overthrow the legitimate government in Kiev. Then immediately it began fueling hysterical anti-Russian sentiments. But the more obvious was the situation, the louder became the voices of the anti-Russian pact in both Western and Eastern Europe. Ukraine, Syria, and Libya, all these conflicts have proven that no logic applies anymore. The West wants to destroy countries that are standing in its way of total global control, and it will try to reach its goal by all means. The propaganda apparatus is always ready to justify any terrorist act committed by North America and Europe. No international legal mechanisms are available to protect the victims. Only great force can prevent the tragedy. Russia is that force. China is another. That is why the empire is terrified by the rise of those two great nations.
Yes. This time, after all those centuries of pain and suffering, Russia is not alone. It is standing tall, and it can finally count on its friends. Some of the greatest minds on earth are joining forces with it. Forget about Eastern Europe. The mightiest country on our planet, China, repeats again and again, China and Russia are each other's most important strategic partners. It is clear that Russian and Chinese people will not allow this planet to go down in flames.
The entirety of revolutionary Latin America is with Russia, and so are dozens of other independent and proud nations worldwide. In the Middle East and Africa and South America and many parts of Asia, Russia is increasingly seen as an enormous moral force. Russia is synonymous with hope, not for those in North America and Europe, but for those who were, for centuries, suffering under their boot.
Whenever I speak publicly, in Eritrea or South Africa, India, China, even Timor-Leste, people want to hear about Russia. What will Russia do next to prevent attacks against Syria or Iran, against Venezuela? I always say Russia is alive and well, and so are its friends, from China to Venezuela and Cuba.
I never lose hope. I repeat, I sincerely believe that soon we will defeat colonialism and fascism and build one beautiful society on this scarred but wonderful planet, and it will be created on the ideals we are now commemorating and celebrating. I salute the 70th anniversary of the great victory. Thank you for saving the world. Congratulations, Russia. And then I roll up my sleeves and work day and night for Leningrad, for what my grandmother stood for, and for Russia, and for the humanity. And that's from Andrei Vilcek. Follow him on Twitter at Andrei Vilcek. Vilcek is spelled V-L-T-C-H-E-K. And our next guest of the evening is Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer is a former Marine Corps officer. He has published widely on the theoretical foundations of scientific knowledge, computer science, artificial intelligence, cognitive science, and evolution of mentality. McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He has also conducted extensive research into the assassination of JFK, the events of 9/11, and the plane crash that killed Senator Paul Wellstone. He's also the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. His latest books include The Evolution of Intelligence, The 9/11 Conspiracy, Render Unto Darwin, and The Place of Probability in Science. And we hear from him in the second week of every month.
Mike and Chuck, it's a pleasure to be back on with you here at the New American Dream. I have had a series of exchanges with Kevin Barrett, my co-host on False Flag Weekly News, in relation to Jade Helm for the last four shows, where it's broadcast each Thursday. And I'd like to encourage everyone to check it out, to go to the False Flag Weekly News archives on No Lies Radio and check out the shows for the last 4 weeks and get a sense of how it's entirely possible for there to be differences in interpretation of the evidence. But where the evidence at this point in time has, in my judgment, become simply overwhelming. Remember, we have the background of the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. We have the establishment of some 300 FEMA camps We have the creation of a North American command never before in American history. We have DHS accumulating 2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, not even permissible in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899. We know there's no domestic terrorism in spite of the NSA surveillance because of a report released by the Senate Committee on Homeland Security on 3 October 2012, where it had reviewed 680 Fusion Center reports gathered over 2009 and 2010, where Fusion Centers merged federal, state, and local anti-terrorist efforts, which revealed in those 680 reports from all over the country, not a single instance of domestic terrorism, nor any case in which a fusion center had thwarted a planned terrorist event. That sample is large enough and broad enough to justify the statistical inference that domestic terrorism in the United States is, if not completely, at least virtually, completely non-existent. What that means is this massive surveillance is intended for another purpose, which appears to be to track and target anyone who might have the background, training, and ability to stand up and resist the imposition of a military police state by force. And that includes veterans, constitutionalists, Ron Paul supporters, 9/11 truthers, NRA members, and the like. They want to know everything about us, and they've even introduced new license plate surveillance devices that can track our movements, whereas is already well known, our cell phones allow us to be tracked anytime we haven't actually removed their batteries. Now, this operation called Jade Helm 15 is profoundly disturbing. I have been told by someone I used to trust that it was merely a matter of National Guard, 1,200 personnel, ordinary training op. But the facts of the matter are completely the opposite. It's a massive operation. It must involve at least 1,200 military vehicles, including armored personnel carriers alone. It involved members of all four branches of the Joint Service. It traces back to a field manual published in December of 2008 by U.S. Army headquarters about dominating human populations, which explains that the scope of their activities is going to include heretofore areas that were off limits, including the continental United States. Now, the most important elements to consider here is that this action involves not only the seven southwestern states, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Nevada, Utah, and Colorado, where Colorado has opted out, but also three southern states, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Florida, that a series of Walmarts, at least five, have been closed, where it turns out that there has been a longstanding agreement between FEMA and Walmart that should at any time FEMA need to take control of the Walmarts, Walmart will relinquish them, which it has done, letting their employees go with no advance notice, and announcing it will endure for at least 6 months, and therefore encouraging them to obtain other work, where the Walmarts themselves, it appears, are going to serve as logistic supply centers, but also command and control for this massive operation. and where those who may have any lingering doubts about what's going on consider they are remodeling the Walmarts. They're putting up 8 to 9 foot fences. They are covering the windows with black plastic so you can't see what's going on inside. They are ripping up the floors. An expert in these areas has advised me they're going to install layers of electrodes so that they can stimulate, inflict pain on the feet of detainees who are going to be processed there within prison structures that are contained in enormous shipping crates of the kind you see aboard freighters at sea, where some of those crates themselves are being used to block the rear entries of Walmarts, where the claim is made that they're closed because of plumbing problems, which is manifestly untrue, where no effort has been made to obtain permits to repair the plumbing for the obvious reason that there are no plumbing problems, and where in at least one instance, and no doubt this will be replicated across the rest, new blast-resistant doors have been installed in the Walmarts. Blast-resistant doors. Now ask yourself, what could be possibly going on here? We have hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of videos on YouTube from citizens who are noticing odd events in their areas and recording them. They could be a transportation of military equipment. It could be black helicopters in the area. It could be strange going-ons in relation to their Walmarts. Each of these is a data point. And while they might be regarded as individually dismissible, when you look at the totality of them, they are vast and varied and present a very profoundly disturbing portrait of what's going on here, where it appears that this is not merely a drill that is alleged to begin on the 25th, the 15th of July and extend to the 15th of September, where I'm now convinced that date was merely to lull us into a false sense of absence of urgency if it's not going to happen till 25 July, because it appears it's already happening here. For example, we have cell phone footage taken by citizens where one of the officers of a group of Jade Helm troops, presumably a platoon, takes a cell phone from a woman who was filming them rounding up a group of detainees and relieves her of her cell phone, smashes it on the ground. This is private property theft, only to notice other citizens with their cell phones were filming it, at which point they realized the jig was up, disbanded, and allowed their detainees to return home. Now, it appears to me that the Walmarts are going to be processing centers so that the detainees, including those falling in the categories I've described, but also anyone who might be expected to exert any kind of a leadership role, including talk show hosts and authors who criticize the government, who are typically categorized in order to belittle their criticism as conspiracy theorists, are going to be at the top of the list. Obama has been seeking an internet kill switch. I believe if this goes forward, as it appears to be in the process of doing, that he will use the kill switch to shut off the internet so we will be unable to communicate with one another, much less to coordinate any efforts we might have to resist what's taking place here. Profoundly disturbing. One recent radio news show, TV news show, about a week and a half ago included five, experts being very dismissive about Black Hawk helicopters, saying this was tinfoil hat stuff. It was put together on YouTube with four or five other videos taken by citizens showing black helicopters in their vicinity, and these were all different communities. This is no joke. I want to encourage you to check out some of the following articles as resources. Closed Florida Walmart fitted with blast and fireproof doors. Check it out. Active denial system in Utah military convoy. This is the use of electromagnetic weapons to make your skin feel like it's on fire for crowd control. Large military drill in Nevada overlapping with Jade Helm. Dave Hodges, the coming hellstorm in America on the Common Sense Show, which shows you a trainload of all these military vehicles, these armored personnel carriers that extend as far as the eye can see. And as a former Marine Corps officer, I can assure you, you don't put together an assemblage of equipment like this unless your plan is to deploy it. Otherwise, insuperable maintenance problems arise because they need to be lubricated, they need to have their oil changed, and you can't do that out in a desert. It has to be done in a garage. And an interview I gave with Joyce Riley on her Power Hour. Check it out. Plus one more, Oath Keepers, Jade Helm 2015, Questions and Reflections. This is serious, my friend. Check it out. It represents the most significant threat to democracy in the United States of my lifetime.
Thanks to Jim Fetzer.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey, it's me, Angela Black. Tune in Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, or in whichever time zone on the globe that you exist for my show, At This Moment, on Studio B here at Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Join me for some great conversations about current topics with a variety of amazing guests. We visit the past. We ponder our future as we exist in the here and now. At This Moment with Angela Black, Thursday evenings, Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Join us on Monday nights for Odyssey at 10 p.m. Eastern Time in Studio B with your host, Michael David. We discuss all types of ancient and modern mysteries, from the Anunnaki to legends and mythology. We often have live guests such as well-known authors and experts on many esoteric topics. Join the intrigue and mystery every Monday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time in Studio B.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern in Studio A. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Don't make me angry.
You've started.
Join us here on Revolution Radio, Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern on Studio B, for a politician, patriot, social savant, businessman, former investment banker, and Veterans Today columnist, Mike Harris. Listen to Mike as he exposes the corruption, sedition, and terrorism within our own government. He knows our system is flawed and that obstruction of justice is all too commonplace. His show, Short End of the Stick, pokes at this corruption with eloquent style. That's Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Studio B, for the Short End of the Stick, with the man who should have been elected governor of Arizona, Mike Harris.
That's right here on Revolution Radio.
I have worked with the CIA, NSA, Templars, and Bilderbergers. Now I work for you. My show will disclose secrets, science, and esoteric knowledge. Join me, Stephen D. Kelly, for 2 hours every Thursday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Time on freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio, Studio A. You can also listen to previous shows by going to youtube.com/freerevolutionradio.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
On the go? Still want to listen? Don't have one of those fancy phones with too many buttons? Don't know what an app is? Or you don't even care? Well, we got you here at Revolution Radio. Now you can dial in 24-7 to listen to our shows. We have a number for Studio A and Studio B, and best of all, it's free. Don't forget, your carrier charges for your cell phone provider may apply, though, so check with your cell provider to make sure. So ready? Here you go. Get a pen. Here's the number. Studio A is 712-432-6958, and Studio B is 716-748-0112. Thank you very much for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station in the world. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at Information Clearinghouse, Dandelion Salad, Nation of Change, World News Trust, and many others, here is Phil Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid!
Good evening, working stiffs. An English lesson. Never give a sucker. Britain has always mirrored the United States and vice versa. Nearly 100 years ago, it was the Brits who helped introduce the use of propaganda into our country's thrust into World War I. Austrian-American Edward Bernays, nephew of Sigmund Freud, took over the mantle from our elite British cousins and carried this form of mind control to great heights, calling it advertising. Label it what you will, but it sure as hell does work. Let's take May 7th UK parliamentary elections, for example. The Conservative Party, cousin to our Republican Party, actually did better than even 5 years ago and now has a majority needed to rule without needing a coalition government. The big loser, once again, as in 2010, was the Labour Party, cousin to our Democratic Party. Now, ponder this for a moment, if you would. Most of the citizens of both countries, actually all countries, are working stiffs. We get up in the morning and punch in the hours necessary to earn our daily bread. We make up well over the majority of the populations of our countries. Some of us have perhaps enough income to pay our bills and maybe take a one-week vacation each year. Some of us don't. Most of us fall into the category of earning enough just to stay above water, in our homes or in our rental units of residence. Lots of us walk around with empty spaces where there once were teeth, because it's a hell of a lot cheaper to have them pulled than pay the $2,000 plus for a root canal and a crown. Then there is a joke going around that many folks driving new cars are what we refer to as car poor, when loan and insurance payments are factored in. All in all, the times are tough and not getting much better for the 90% of us. One would think that all of the above would guarantee Britain's Labour Party and our Democratic Party winning any and all elections. Yet even when both have won, the margins are minute at best. Why? Well, the legacy of Edward Bernays and his counterparts in propaganda have always been as vibrant as hell. The reality is that both our Democratic Party and its UK Labour cousin are in actuality controlled and nurtured by the same super rich who control their major opposition. One could go even further in the example of Britain, that the so-called left of Labour Liberal Democratic Party is equally controlled by the same super rich. Success in advertising, isn't it? Here at home, we have both major parties supporting this phony and disingenuous war on terror and the bloated, obscenely so, military spending, where more than 50% of all our federal taxes, personal and corporate, both parties get funding from the bigs, big energy, big pharma, big banking, big defense, and so on. Imagine if the elected officials of our Democratic Party and Labour in the UK actually created platforms that stood up to all the bigs and demonstrated while in Congress and Parliament. You think that the Republicans and Tories would even matter anymore? Imagine if much of that excessive military spending went back to our states and cities for needed services. No. The time has come to vote for independent candidates who share our core values on key issues, not for the proverbial lesser of two evils. Do go and vote, for that is our right as citizens, but street corner and town hall activism is most pertinent in these times. Turn off the mainstream news and talk shows and search for alternative media. Read, read, read. Authors like Michael Parenti, his son Christian, Noam Chomsky, William Blunt, Howard Zinn, Andrew Coburn, John Pilger, Chris Hedges, Greg Palast, Kuznick and Stone, to name but a few. Stand for real and viable change in not only our economic and foreign policies, but in our understanding as citizens of the nation that we true patriots love. Thank you.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Hello, everyone. Now for your local Earth news. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard. This is a New American Dream editorial comment from New American Dream columnist Mickey Z. Mickey Z says, in April 29, 2015, New York Times article written by journalists Richard A. Hoppel and Alan Blinder bore this headline, "Curfew appears to bring calm to Baltimore after days of unrest." Days of unrest. Imagine that. Imagine if life for the non-white residents of Baltimore only involved days of unrest. Not weeks or months or years or decades, not even centuries, as the Susquehannocks, the original inhabitants of that geographical area, can attest to. In 1600, as many as 7,000 Susquehannocks lived in about 20 villages in what we now call Baltimore. Within one century, a lethal combination of smallpox, colonial conquest, and white supremacy had reduced that number to 300. In 1763, the last 20 or so surviving Susquehannocks were massacred by a white lynch mob, thus rendering the tribe extinct. That final act of genocide was properly labeled Days of Unrest. Later in the Times article mentioned above, Hopel and Blinder reassured their nervous readers that a measure of normalcy was to be restored on Wednesday morning. What the newspaper of record neglected to mention is that a measure of normalcy in Baltimore means roughly 25% of residents live below the poverty line. The unemployment rate is 19.1%, and less than 60% of high school students graduate.
Normal in Black Baltimore means AIDS cases are nearly five times more common in the African-American community, and Black infants are almost nine times more likely to die before age one than white infants. If that's what passed for normal in your everyday life, I'm guessing you'd be a lot less likely to vent about looters and thugs from the safety of your smartphone. Obama's using your money 24/7 to launch drones. Mountaintops are blown off to generate power for your computer. Workers are oppressed and exploited all across the globe so you can support the latest fashions. And billions of sentient beings are slaughtered for your food. But when people of color rise up, you suddenly become a Quaker?
To all those who identify as pacifists, I submit, the vast majority of food we consume results from unspeakable animal cruelty, environmental devastation, and the use of exploited human labor. This food contains toxins and chemicals and pesticides and GMOs that rain violence down upon ourselves and all living things, and the system that controls access to such food perpetrates the daily, hourly brutality of poverty,
Every single bite you take contains the not-so-hidden ingredient of violence.
The clothes we wear and the gadgets we worship also contain myriad toxins, and these ubiquitous items are usually manufactured by the equally ubiquitous sweatshop labor, prison labor, child labor, and slave labor.
The products we use to clean ourselves and our homes don't just contain toxins. They are toxins sold in toxic packaging, and they typically involve the scientifically specious and morally indefensible practice of animal experimentation.
Every time you flick on a light switch, you can thank the mining companies literally blowing the tops off mountains to reach coal, and then dumping the toxic waste into the valleys below, polluting the headwaters of rivers that provide drinking water to millions of people. Other violent energy options? Fracking, nuclear plants, tar sands, offshore drilling, etc.
Do you live in the United States and pay taxes? If so, you are not only funding all I've mentioned above, but also the increasingly militarized and unaccountable blue bloc of law enforcement from sea to overfish sea and their prison industrial complex accomplices. You help finance the criminal regimes we call allies all across the globe. Then, of course, at least half of your federal tax dollars are openly used to subsidize the most violent institution on the planet, the U.S. Department of so-called defense. Still, somehow, you remain a pacifist and believe that's automatically a good thing. Don't flatter yourself.
You may opt to call yourself nonviolent, but that designation will do nothing to stop the other side from using force, often in your name, using your money. The 1% has relied on violence for centuries and will continue to do so until it runs out of weapons. It's both counterproductive and arrogant to assume you can dictate the terms of any engagement in which one side is fully committed to violence as the norm. Also, bringing it back to the broader sense I introduced above, to claim pacifism is to ignore the implicit daily violence of modern human culture. The primary reason why so many of us play along with the current system and often tolerate the intolerable is because if we didn't, we'd eventually face violence from the state. Eviction, arrest, detainment, prison, etc.
We could go on. The examples are virtually without limit. But to sum up for now, the violence in Baltimore didn't begin with the protesters or looters. The blue bloc of law enforcement is always the most dangerous gang of thugs in town. This equation will not change after the riot chasers move on from Baltimore to the next media-saturated crisis. The violence in Baltimore didn't begin with the blue bloc murder of Freddie Gray. The United States is built on and based on and functions on overt and covert violence. Any discussion of violence, nonviolence, and social justice that ignores this reality is an exercise in deep denial. And that's Mickey Z, Mickey Zezimo. So that's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck. And so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. It is what it is. At the end of the day, have a good day, and remember to always tip your congressman. Our next guest of the evening is Susan Lindauer. Susan Lindauer speaks to us each month from Tacoma Park, Maryland. As a U.S. intelligence asset, Susan Lindauer covered anti-terrorism at the Iraqi embassy in New York from 96 up to the invasion. Independent sources have confirmed that she gave advance warning about the 9/11 attack. She also started talks for the Lockerbie trial with Libyan diplomats shortly after requesting to testify before Congress about successful elements of pre-war intelligence. Lindauer became one of the first non-Arab Americans arrested on the Patriot Act as an Iraqi agent. She was accused of warning her second cousin, White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card, and Secretary of State Colin Powell that war with Iraq would have catastrophic consequences. Gratis of the Patriot Act, her indictment was loaded with secret charges and secret evidence. She was subjected to 1 year in prison on Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth, Texas, without a trial or hearing, and threatened with indefinite detention and forcible drugging to shut her up. After 5 years of indictment without a conviction or guilty plea, the Justice Department dismissed all charges 5 days before President Obama's inauguration. Lindauer has written a book, Extreme Prejudice, the terrifying story of the Patriot Act and the 9/11 cover-ups of 9/11 in Iraq, which is being made into a movie. And Chuck will be getting Susan on the phone right about now. Have any luck, Chuck?
Well, it should be dialing.
Hey there!
Well, hello, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was outside picking up my little dachshund who can't run up and down stairs anymore. So okay. I apologize. Are we live now?
Yes, we are. Go for it.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody. I apologize for that. My little dog is 15 and a half years old, and he's a miniature dachshund, and he can no longer run up and down the stairs, so he has to be carried. And he chose that moment to, anyway, I apologize to everybody. Tonight, I want to talk about Jade Helm and the Patriot Act. For me, this is very personal. We've been hearing a lot of celebrities and big name media stars from CNN and the Washington Post, the New York Times, all the usual suspects, right? The culprits, those who are paid propagandists to put the American people to sleep with the Kool-Aid. And they're bringing out their Kool-Aid right now, telling us that we are exaggerating our fear of Jade Helm and that we're acting paranoid. Well, I just want to answer that question because I have a very special and unique experience on the Patriot Act. And if I, those of you will remember that I was the second non-Arab American ever indicted on the Patriot Act. And I was subjected to secret charges, secret evidence, secret grand jury testimony. We talk about that a lot. But what we don't talk about is that 4 months prior to my arrest, I had a very, prescient conversation with my hardcore neoconservative Zionist Republican father. And he was visiting me in Maryland, and we were talking about the Patriot Act with no idea that I was in just a few short months. Now realize this is 4 months before my arrest. This is November, a visit in November to Washington, D.C., and I'm arrested in the middle of March. And my father and I had a huge fight over the Patriot Act. And my father insisted that never would an American citizen be subjected to the Patriot Act. Those laws, he told me, only apply to foreigners. And I was being paranoid. I was being hysterical. And that only the bad guys, people who were involved in violent activities, terrorism events, which, you know, in his mind, it was acceptable to do this to a brown-skinned person. And I realize that a lot of you are, you may also not like the Arabs very much. But what you need to know, some of you may not like the Arabs very much. Some of you may not like Muslims very much. And you may be thinking in your own mind that, well, it really is okay if we do this to them. The problem is that the law does not distinguish by color. Equal opportunity, according to the law, means that everybody gets to be attacked by that law. Once it's on the books, there is absolutely nothing to stop the federal government from instituting it against everybody else. And that was what I told my father. And my father was just hardcore Republican. What can I say? Real neocon conservative, like PNAC. Project for the New American Century, that kind of Republican, not like any of you friendly conservatives out there. My father's like a real Zionist, like pro-Israel. You know, he would sell me down the river for Israel for anything. I mean, Israel first before America. He's an 80-year-old man. He's old. He's maybe 82 now. But so he does get a little bit of a break because when he was, he's a very old man. But the point is that he insisted that we were being hysterical, and he insisted that those of us who were fighting against the Patriot Act, he insisted that it only involved, and this was interesting, it only involved surveillance, and that it only involved international surveillance. Because remember, when they passed the Patriot Act, that's what they assured us, They said, oh, no, no, it only involves international phone calls. Do any of you even remember this? Let me jog your memory here. We were promised that it would not affect American citizens, and it would only affect terrorists, you know, a few specific individuals who were doing bad things, who had violent activities, and it would not encompass metadata collection by the NSA and massive surveillance of all American citizens. There wouldn't be any nudie photographs of men walking around in their underwear, or women, you know, in their bathrobes getting ready for work in the morning when the government turns on the webcam and captures whatever you're doing and then circulates these photographs. I have refused to have a webcam on my computer for exactly that reason, because I know they do it. And it's just that the thing is, we have known it first. You know, the Alex Jones crowd, the conspiracy theorists, the New American Dream crowd, you know, the Truth Frequency Radio crowd, Revolution Radio, we have known it first, but we are not wrong. And we are not paranoid. When I was on the Patriot, the other thing that I want to remind you is that how scary the NDAA really is in a practical sense. And I would like to say that I was very disappointed. For those who are part of the Facebook page called Panda, People Against the NDAA, I think the cause is outstanding. But Panda has been very elitist, and they won't allow me to post anything on Panda. Just FYI. I am persona non grata. Because I said, you guys don't know what the heck this law really means. And they're like, of course we know. And I'm like, no, you really don't. What's going to happen in reality is that the military is going to make arrests. They're going to go door to door, and everybody knows that. But what you haven't thought about is, after they arrest you, what's going to happen? First of all, your family's going to come looking for you, and they're going to go to that local military base. And the military's going to look them straight in the eye, and they're going to say what they said to my uncle. She's not here. There is no Susan Lindauer on Carswell Air Force Base. My uncle, who drove 700 miles, and for the Europeans, I think that's about 1,200 kilometers. He drove 1,200 kilometers, 700 miles in each direction to see me, because he drove his car because he needed to think and get away from the computer and have nobody phoning him, because he had to think this through. What the heck were we going to do to save this situation? And he was my last chance. God bless my Uncle Ted. He was my last chance. So he shows up at the base, and he says, okay, I'm here to see Susan Lindauer. She's an inmate at the prison. They say, well, there is no prison, and there is no Susan Lindauer. And that's the first thing. The first time he came, they said that. Then the second time he came back, and he said, well, that's ridiculous. I have the court order demanding that she surrender here, and we have letters from her. They said, well, that's just too bad. She's not here. Go away. You're not going to see her. He said, but I'm family, and I'm an attorney, and I'm actually her co-counsel. So you are required by the Constitution to let her see me. And I'm also on her visitors list. He's an attorney. He filed out all the paperwork. And the military base just said, too bad, you're not coming on our base. We're not going to let you in. So we literally, my Uncle Ted came back a second time. That time, they admitted that there was a prison on the base. But the second time, they also refused to let him see me. They said that there were no visiting hours, so he would have to come back. He said, well, I'm going to go to the judge, and I'm going to get the U.S. Marshals to let me in. And we're going to and that is exactly what it took. Literally, my uncle had to come back with the United States District Court Judge, Chief Justice at the time, Chief Justice Michael Mukasey, on standby in his courtroom with the U.S. Marshals flanking him at the gate in order with a constitutional crisis that Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Refused to cover. We asked her to cover this. We said, they won't let this woman see an attorney and her family. They've locked her up at a military base, and they're denying she's there. And they won't let her see the attorney. Amy Goodman said, oh, well, golly, you know, so they wouldn't cover it. Nobody would cover it. We had to fight this all by ourselves. That's what you're looking at. That is what you should expect. And it's going to be ugly, and it's going to be scary, and we are not paranoid. There is no way we're paranoid. So I just want to, you know, reassure all of you who are listening to the corporate media out there blasting us for our fearfulness and mocking us and scorning us. I don't think they're going to declare martial law in July either. But when the next major crash comes 4 or 5 months later or a year from now, they'll be ready. So I hope everybody realizes this is not a conspiracy theory.
Well, that was a frightening picture of what has happened to you and the extrapolation to how it could happen to any of us.
I was the first. I will not be the last. And I'll tell you, it was the most terrifying experience of my life because I know how to fight. And you all remember they accused me of being incompetent. They flat out committed felony, perjury, denying who I was, denying my history, my identity, denying all my activities. And they locked me up. They said I was incompetent. They wanted to forcibly drug me with Haldol, Ativan, and Prozac and detain me. And oh, yes. And they wanted to detain me indefinitely for up to 10 years with no right to a trial or hearing. Now realize that. I, little me, and never done a terrorist attack in my life, anti-violence. I mean, and I was threatened with up to 10 years in prison, indefinite detention, up to 10 years with no right to a hearing at all to prove that I was telling the truth. Nothing. I had no rights. It was the scariest thing you've ever seen. You will never love the Constitution so much as when you have the George Orwell 1984, where they write the rules and they change the rules on the wall. And looking at the Constitution inside that prison, like in the prison library, it's not the Constitution that you and I read out here. It is a completely different constitution. It's scary.
I bet it is. Well, Susan, thank you so much for presenting this. It's truly inspiring to hear what you went through, and we all have to be alert.
Thank you so much. You have a great evening.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Chuck?
Well, once again, I think we are not having the bottom of the hour ads, and so let me just remind everyone that this is the New American Dream radio show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener supported. They have two full streams that go very close to 24 hours a day, lots of different shows, a variety of formats, and it's a very good listener-supported, independent streaming radio station on the internet. Please visit freedomslips.com and find out more about it. Throw them a donation, buy some of their promotional products, whatever you can do. Mike, take it away.
At the end of the day, stay on the same page, take it to the next level, show us what you bring to the table, and step up to the plate, because this is the dawn of another morning in America. NSA total surveillance satellite pointy things have revealed some interesting documents. Bush statements regarding 9/11 on the day of 9/11, Obama regarding 9/11 before he was elected president, Dick Cheney talking to George Bush and his father while 9/11 was happening, Bill Clinton in on that same phone call. We have conversations between John Stewart and Amy Goodman and David Letterman, Katie Couric, Matt Lauer, Rachel Maddow, and Ruth Conniff, swearing to never mention 9/11. And we have Barack Obama statements on the Boston bombing, Oklahoma City, Sandy Hook, and a burial at sea. Of course we do. But what we give you, well, that's different. NSA total surveillance. At the end of the day, stay on the same page, take it to the next level. Show us what you bring to the table. Step up to the plate. It is what it is. I know, right? Not that there's anything wrong with it. We've got 10 trillion pages of that stuff, and you are welcome to it, because this is a free country, and this is the dawn of another morning in America. Have a nice day.
Grab your third cup of coffee, everyone. Plant your butt on the sofa. Let's pretend we're open to talking about anything on The View. Let's talk about Area 51, the McVeigh execution, the flame shooting from the tank shown destroying the Branch Davidian home, burning the people alive. That day in Oglala, June 26, 1975, what really happened? Nukes used on 9/11? Israel, the fascist entity that threatens the existence of the planet. Chemtrails, WTF. Secret renditions to torture prisons, WTF. FEMA camps, WTF. Extraterrestrials meeting with government leaders, WTF. On The View today, we are talking about billions in failed programs wasted in Afghanistan. The U.S. has spent $120 billion on reconstruction in Afghanistan. Too bad Detroit isn't in Afghanistan. The View. Let's pretend we're open to talking about anything, like people do.
And now from the William Bloom Anti-Empire Report. This basic belief in America's good intentions is often linked to American exceptionalism. Let's look at how exceptional U.S. foreign policy has been. Since the end of World War II, the United States has attempted to overthrow more than 50 foreign governments, most of which were democratically elected, dropped bombs on the people of more than 30 countries, attempted to assassinate more than 50 foreign leaders, attempted to suppress a populist or nationalist movement in 20 countries, grossly interfered in democratic elections in at least 30 countries, led the world in torture, not only the torture performed directly by Americans upon foreigners, but providing torture equipment, torture manuals, lists of people to be tortured, and in-person guidance by American teachers, especially in Latin America. Keep in mind that our precious homeland, above all, seeks to dominate the world. For economic reasons, nationalistic reasons, ideological, Christian, and for other reasons, world hegemony has long been America's bottom line. And let's not forget the powerful executive branch officials whose salaries, promotions, agency budgets, and future well-paying private sector jobs depend upon perpetual war. These leaders are not especially concerned about the consequences for the world of their wars. Bloom continues. I realize that I have fed you an awful lot of negativity about what America has done to the world, and maybe it's been kind of hard for some of you to swallow, but my purpose has been to try to loosen the grip on your intellect and your emotions that you've been raised with, or to help you to help others to loosen that grip, the grip that assures you that your beloved America means well. U.S. foreign policy will not make much sense to you as long as you believe that its intentions are noble, as long as you ignore the consistent pattern of seeking world domination, which is a national compulsion of very long standing, known previously under such names as Manifest Destiny, the American Century, American Exceptionalism, Globalization, or as Madeleine Albright put it, the Indispensable Nation. While others less kind have used the term imperialist. In this context, I can't resist giving the example of Bill Clinton, while president in 1995, he was moved to say, whatever we may think about the political decisions of the Vietnam era, the brave Americans who fought and died there had noble motives. They fought for the freedom and the independence of the Vietnamese people. Yes, that's really the way our leaders talk. But who knows what they really believe? It is my hope that many of you who are not now activists against the empire and its wars will join the anti-war movement as I did in 1965 against the war in Vietnam. It's what radicalized me and so many others. When I hear from people of a certain age about what began the process of losing their faith that the United States means well, it's Vietnam that far and away is given as the main cause. I invite you all to join our movement. Thank you. And that's William Bloom. You might find more comments and more from William Bloom on the Anti-Empire Report. Well, it's been another long week in Newtown, my hometown at the end of the empire. The sharp-eyed, white-headed eagle circled silently, stealthily, around and around, wings outstretched, small circle to big circle, securing the perimeter, concentric coils of security. Metallic blue eyes clanked and whirred and locked for a moment on adjoining little burgs along the winding Greenberg River, New Cumbria, New Angus, New Broome, New Fife, New Greenham. Locals just called it Newtown. The eagle saw everything, so it must know everything, right? It zoomed in, out, as a camera recording, writing into its brain all that it saw. In a downtown neighborhood, a man ran from a house, leaping the steps while his pistol blazed at those on the sidewalk in the bushes. The reports barked like fireworks, leaving the tall man stretched on his side, still in running pose, red mixing with the green Christmas colors. The driver of the ambulance in the street turned on his lights, hit the siren, flipped it off. He climbed down, waited with one foot on the asphalt for the cameramen to get their last shots. Okay. He nodded to his helper and they wheeled the gurney across the bumpy lawn, around the lights, director, producer, extras. They stretched on blue gloves, expertly enveloped the body with the black bag, took safety precautions, bent knees straight back to lift, at least until their knees hurt, as they had both been to a recent workshop, tossed the body onto the gurney, and this time followed the goddamn walk.
Print is dead, said the short, dumpy man, balding, twanging his suspenders against his chest as he slapped the magazine onto the desk. Print is dead, said the headline on the cover of the four-color glossy industry magazine. Nicostatus Greenberg paced in his office, trailing cigar smoke, turning and running into the smoke, away from it, back again. The tarnished plate on the softball trophy on the desk, with pitcher in underhand motion, said, Nick Green, old fireball. His memories hung on the wood panel, black and white family photos blending into 70s color and stopping 10 years ago, halfway down the west wall. Lined up by the door were fishing poles, tackle boxes, fishing hats, waders, and a neat stack of crisp fishing magazines. A giant moose loomed right over his desk with nose almost in the doorway that had 20 nicknames. Where exactly it had come from was the object of some debate. Green stopped to look out the windows, hands on hips. He adjusted his Yankees cap, puffed a cigar, his stomach sandwiched stains in the face of the man seated at Nick's desk and his back to those gathered for the production meeting. Nick Green looked, but did not see. He picked at his fingernails. Nobody ever said anything. They must not notice. In his search for something, he adjusted his cap, picked more at his hands, scrunched his nose like a worried rabbit, and placed his hand for a moment on his thumping heart. He searched for answers, but not in the smoke rising from the factory stacks of the publishing house that lay in New Fife, right on the river. It had been a real publishing house back then, a house overlooking the river in the middle of the field with many floors and offices and cozy dens for writing and thinking and drawing and the craft of making something special to last for decades. "Who said," said one of those behind Nick, "the Easter Bunny?" Nick spun with a laugh. Big arms and smile spot on that comment just as it was delivered as he had hoped. Around him sat the department heads on metal folding chairs they'd brought themselves. Michelle Jones, editing. Lori Grome, art. Amos Chadwick, research and writing. Buddy Fowler, maintenance and landscaping. Cade Ewart, crowd control and security. Catherine Bambi Cartwright, HR, PR. In Nick Green's rickety rolling wooden chair behind the desk sat Austin Bellincioni, lead accountant for Beantree Barkum Bagner Cruzinianus. Hunched over a yellow legal pad, occasionally punching with two fingers at an adding machine he'd lugged from his office specifically for this meeting. Each of the department heads held in their laps the latest issue of Book Publishing Right Now. "Ring!" sprang the black phone in the outer office. Executive assistant Joan McCarthy picked it up, gave the answer she'd been told to give, put down the receiver, picked it right up again. "What's the buzz?" Nick Green asked HR, PR. Bambi Cartwright checked Twitter and Facebook on her phone, shook her head. "Not much." "Not much?" "Nothing." The shooting was just something they tried every year to gain publicity. Interest. For the release of the latest sophomore history textbook. It had worked at first, but was now perfunctory. Nobody goes for it. This one was supposed to depict, like, John Wilkes Booth or some crap, Nick thought he recalled. "Who knows? Does it freaking matter?" was the way Nick explained the idea to the department managers years ago when they asked who the dead person was supposed to be. "Everybody leads with blood. Watch the news. Read the books, the papers. It's blood or it's a dud, dude." The magazine and the latest in-house number said that publishing is dead. "How come nobody told me? Anyone think to let me know this fairly interesting news?" He ripped off his cap and flipped it expertly as if planned onto one of the giant antlers on Big Gus. He did not shoot it, he told anyone new to the office. Either his father or grandfather, or it was there when they moved in, or it was given to them. Some stupid schmucking legend said the head showed up one day on the front sidewalk, and the receptionist of that era held the door open with her foot and dragged it inside. Could be true. It did not matter now. Could they even put out this new edition, which was supposed to be ready yesterday? Should they? Or should they just shut it down? Go home. Nicostatus Greenberg was the latest of the Greenbergs to run Beantree Barkum Bagner Cruzinianus Publishing. He wasn't going to be the last. Not going to be the one who let it run into the ground. He had 9 children and perhaps 1-2 of them yet to be taking over the family business. The New Fife Publishing House was the only real remaining business in Newtown. If it went down, so did the town, the people. Nick Green had lived here all his life. He was not moving. If he ruined the business in the town, he would have no fun the rest of his life. His neighbors would stare at him at the gas station, at church, at the ball game. Just stare. They would never say anything, but they would stare. There would be no ball games. The school would close. He wanted to have some fun. He deserved to have some fun. He wanted to quit. wanted to go fishing, but he did not want to fail. To have to think about this for the rest of his life. He wanted to think about fish and smell like fish. Ah, now, that would be perfect. The ambulance ganked and rolled and banged into the hospital emergency bay. The driver rammed it into park while his partner was already climbing into the box. The bag rolled back and forth on the floor, hitting the metal locker one side, then the other. The driver threw open the back door. Now both emergency workers wrestled with the body bag, trying to pin it down like a bowl of black jello. They pressed with one hand while both searched for the zipper with the other. They got the head out. The man stood straight up, his balding skull rubbing the top of the metal box. He shed the plastic garbage bag while making sure the driver and helper saw his red, sweaty, angry face. "What the hell?" he said. "Sorry, there were some bumps," said the driver, as the helper leaned to pick up and tidy. "Hey, wait a minute. Can I get a photo?" "Just a sec," said one of the EMTs. "Wait." "Okay, shoot," said the driver, guy EMT. A flash fired. For a split moment, the ambulance lit up, freezing the surprised faces forever. Their eyes cleared, and they saw the man with the camera and the pen between fingers. First, they lunged with their arms and then began to move their feet while keeping their heads down, leaping out onto the concrete as the door to the street banged closed. They stopped. "We done?" said one of the three men. "Yep. That should do it," said another. "Good," said the third.
And that's the news from Newtown, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average.
The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. There's no hidden black military budget. There are no UFO files Americans cannot see. No JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetime. No destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police. No evidence from Ground Zero taken away before we could even look at it. We are not the USSR or the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That is our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. We have a dream of bringing the United States politicians, journalists, and generals who brought about this long 12-year war on debacle to trial and put on TV, just like OJ, every afternoon, so every American can watch. Just like the McCarthy hearings and the JFK funeral procession. Mike, my voice seems to be going. Can you take over?
Sure. What we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now, we live on lies. We subsist on lies, but it's not really living. 9/11 was an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Rice, Powell, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, they all know that. What we need in America is a truth commission like they had in South Africa to heal their broken country. We need to put certain people on the stand and we need to be allowed to ask questions. Our country is surely broken as well. The troops are not protecting us. That is somebody's spin on the day's news, somebody's advertising slogan, someone else's sermon. The troops serve the empire. They are not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. American bases overseas serve nobody but the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who go face to face with the empire, those in the plowshares movement, for one example. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks. He is complicit. He has lied. He has continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie, and he knows he is lying. He lied right to our faces on national television when he said that Osama bin Laden had been killed and buried at sea.
Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, and Jessica Lynch was rescued heroically. The USA does not torture. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. George Bush won the 2000 election. And see, there is a plane there in that hole in Shanksville. It went all the way into that hole, and no, there's no blood and no bodies and no luggage scattered or plane parts. And Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. Remember the anthrax letters which said, "Are you afraid?" Those were not written with a rock and chisel like Fred Flintstone from the recesses of some cave in Afghanistan. Those letters came from persons within our own government, like a horror movie, and the killer is in the same house with us. These killers are right here with us, and they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid. Chuck, how are you feeling? Do you want to give your closing, or are you done?
Okay. I think I can close. Thank you. I'd like to thank all of you tonight for joining us for the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank our guests, and always we thank all of you listeners. We're here every week on Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. And we hope that you'll be back next week and every week. We love to have you return and listen. You can always listen to our archives if you're not available on that Thursday. Our archives are available at http://newdream.us. That's newdream.us. And, well, thank you, Mike, and good night.
You bet you, Chuck. Thanks again to our guests, Phil Ferruccio, Jim Fetzer, Richard Flamer, and Susan Lindauer. To get the archives of the show from February 2011, go to theshow.newamericandream.info. And as always, we apologize for our mistakes, and right now we are planning to make fewer mistakes next week. To contact the show, either Chuck or me or any of our guests, write to me at nwestiowa@gmail.com. And as always, we wish to acknowledge the work of South Dakota stone artisan Borglum Borglumson as he works to make over Mount Rushmore, put the real face of American history up there in stone. Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, Mark David Chapman, and James Earl Ray. You can follow the ongoing project at looserock.com, rollingstones.com, and jackrubyrubyridge.com. To help support the show, please purchase one of our Tom Jefferson Rolling in His Grave handy campfire rotisseries for the hobo in your family, or get one of our family-sized Obamaville Tom Jefferson rotisseries for the busy family on the move from town to town, woods to woods, made in Korea. And so, good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Emily Parker. Good night, Ben Wheeler. Good night, Crystal Campbell. Good night, Nancy Lanza. Good night, James Foley and Stephen Soloff. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Muhammad Atta. And good night, Barbara Holson, wherever you are.
Mike and Chuck, it's a pleasure to be.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
He wants a challenge. Let's give him one.
The voice that whispers in your ears are the screams that you fear. The mind you cannot defy is the heart that rules mankind. The people who made you are the gods that will save you. I am Steve Travesty.